Thank you. I dare say that all of us have certain desires and aspirations. We have hopes and ambitions, and yes, we would like to have them manifest in a way that is beneficial to us. As human beings, we look around us and we observe certain things. We notice that some individuals appear to be better off financially than others. Individuals seem to enjoy healthy bodies, while others not so much. For some, the way is harmonious, while discord is the way for others. When we observe these things, we notice the wide range of experience that is available to the human being. And we wonder, do these things come to us randomly, by chance? Or is there some law that governs these conditions? Now, you know, intuitively, we feel that certain things do belong to us. The feeling is that life is meant to be enjoyed, and that there should be value and meaning to our experience. We have come to this conclusion based on what we saw in the time of observing others. We looked, we noticed, and we judge one way to be better than another. Surely what belongs to us would fall into that category that we have identified as being better. Now, this line of reasoning is the result of viewing life according to the five senses, relying on the mental thought to give us our understanding. The working in the realm of humanhood, it bears witness to what appears to be. It does not know the truth of being. As wonderful as the individual may seem to be, viewing life from the perspective of the personal sense is limited. The personal sense can only bear witness to what it knows in a material way, using the human faculties for comprehension. But we change our minds and we come to different conclusions. We pick things up and we put them down. There is no stability or permanence to the human way of comprehension. What we claim as belonging to us in this way, it's temporary. It does not last. But let us remember, we intuitively feel certain things belong to us. This means that we are capable of knowing in ways that are not limited to the mental work of manipulation. We are not asked to rely on the human comprehension. Each of us has a feeling nature that is not influenced by the work of thought. So where do we learn of this place? Where may we discover what belongs to the absolute? Where may we turn for instruction concerning the life we know we are meant to live? Well, we begin with the Bible. The Bible speaks of the abundant life. All of us are familiar with that passage. Now, usually when we first read of that life, we are still doing our work in the mental realm. And so our initial response is to interpret this life as an abundance of material goods. But now, with the Bible as our reference, surely we will discover what truly belongs to us. By now, we may have given up trying to make things happen based on what others have done. And we may no longer be trying to change one condition into something else that we have identified as being better. Our attention is now given to finding that abundant life referred to in the Bible. The intent is to have the Bible's abundant life, but to have it in a material way. We don't yet understand that what the world calls its abundance does not belong to the abundant life referred to in the Bible. Now, one thing we did notice when we did our work in the realm of thought is that there appears to be a period of time between our desire and when it is placed into manifestation. There seems to be a process that brings into form the aspirations of our ambition. Now, whether we call this a law or a process, apparently there is a time for expression. The time for expression is not a certain law, but rather it seems to come when particular conditions have been met. But exactly what are these conditions? When we ponder this question, we may consider the role we have to play. Is there something that we must do? Is there some preparation that is first required of us? Well, we know in a human way that a certain amount of preparation is required before something can happen. If we want to receive a degree of achievement from a place of higher learning, we must first take the course of study required for that degree. If our desire is to get married and start a family, we must first establish a relationship that will allow this to happen. If our desire is to play a musical instrument, we must first practice the law and the art of music, devoting the time and attention necessary to meet that goal. We look at this and we begin to wonder, is there a degree required before we can live the life that we intuitively feel belongs to us? What is that preparation? And if so, what might it be? Well, once again, let us go to the Bible, to that place in Ecclesiastes that speaks of a season for all expression, a time to sow and a time to reap, a time to get and a time to lose, a time to weep and a time to laugh. It would appear that all of life requires a season for expression, and the season cannot be rushed. We have hopes and desires, goals and objectives. When will this happen for us? The abundant life referred to in the Bible is not the one of manifested form. The Bible speaks of the spiritual life as the abundant one, filled with the blessings of the infinite storehouse of every good thing, of wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. It is ours, but certain things are required of us. We are told to be alert, for we do not know when the hour cometh that will reveal it to us. The Bible tells us the story of the 10 virgins who took their lamps and went forth to await the arrival of the bridegroom. We are told that 5 of them were wise and 5 of them were foolish. The 5 of them that were foolish, they took their lamps with them, but no oil. the five that were wise. They carried their oil with them in the vessels with their lamps. The story goes on, and we are told that the bridegroom tarried. They all slumbered and slept. But at midnight, the cry came, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh, and so go ye out to meet him." Then all of the virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said unto the wise, "Give us of your oil, for our lamps have gone out." But the wise answered and said, "Not so, lest there not be enough for us. Rather, go to those who sell and buy for yourselves." And while they were gone, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. And afterwards came the other virgins, saying, "Lord, Lord, open unto us." But he answered and said, "Verily I say unto you, I know you not. Watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour when the Son of Man cometh." Now the five wise virgins, they are of the inner realm. The five foolish ones are of the outer. The way to supply the oil for the lamps of the virgins is to affirm the spiritual life, to be the one of the eye divine and of the inner ear. This is the preparation necessary to enter into the holy place of the Most High. Now the foolish virgins, the ones of the five senses, they are not able to bear witness to the spiritual life, and they are not granted admittance to that holy place. They have not prepared the way necessary to do so. The individuals who do their work in the mental realm are not able to enter the kingdom of heaven. And even if in their despair they cry out, "Lord, Lord," the answer will be, "I know you not." God does not recognize the one of confused identity and misguided thought as his child. He knows the spiritual being, the one who was sent forth to be the light of the world. It is this one that he calls by name and grants entry into the kingdom. "This is my child in whom I am well pleased." Now the thing is, whether we are counted among the foolish or among the wise, we do not know when the hour cometh. When the call is given and we are asked to come up higher in understanding, so that we may enter that place of the abundant life. We carry our light within us, in the very center of our being. And it reveals itself to us when we acknowledge its presence. When we go forth to seek the kingdom, we do so through times of study, through times of lessons and discussions. We practice and we learn. We go to that place called give no thought, and then we become still. We have our time of meditation, that time when we become acquainted with the light in us, and we are alert, awaiting the cry that brings the invitation, "Enter into my sanctuary and commune with me." We prepare because we do not know when the hour cometh for us. Now, we have been told that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And if we knew us as the spiritual being, we would be living in this kingdom which is at hand. Because you see, our reality is the divine being. But when we press out and take form, we sometimes forget who we are. Exactly how far we have wandered into the far country determines how much work is required to return to the Father's house. The story of the prodigal son reveals that all human beings are in that particular state because, you see, humanhood is the far country. But it is every man's and every woman's destiny to come to themselves. And when they do so, they remember the Father's house. And the necessary step is to rise and go to the Father. None of us knows when the hour cometh for us. We don't know when we will take that step. The one that allows us to drop the sense of life that belongs to the human being and then accept the one of spirit. But we must also understand that we of ourselves cannot dictate how this is done or when it will happen. When I say that we take the step, I don't mean that it is something we consciously do on our own. It is not the result of a deliberate thought, a personal choice, or decision that we have made. No. The call comes from within us when we are prepared to answer it. Since we don't know when this will happen, we must be alert. Now, to me, staying alert in a spiritual way is to stay prayed up, to practice, learn, and then live the life we are meant to live. But when we hear that call from within, we rise in consciousness to answer it. We trim our lamp. That is, we gather what it is we know to be true, and we carry it with us into the higher place. And since it is built on spiritual revelation, the sustenance is there and the light will not go out. We do not know when the hour cometh for us, when we will receive what we intuitively know belongs to us. Christ is present as each one of us. But we don't know when we will consciously be aware that this is so. Now, the human being is so concerned with the timing of events. This being is very much aware of the process side of life, and it grows impatient with the process. And you know, it's at this time that we are tempted to try to make things happen, to revert back to the need to control and manipulate through the mental thought, and I can relate. All of us, I think, have done this from time to time. I mean, I think we have. After all, we are human beings, and at one time, that is who we thought we were. We did not yet know us as spiritual beings, and we had not yet received the call asking us to come up higher. So that is what we knew, and that is where we did our work. Now, at that time, if someone had tried to tell us about wait till the hour comes for us, or we should wait for our own to be revealed, we would have dismissed it. We didn't believe it. Or we simply would not be willing to wait for it to happen. Now, Jesus understood that everything has its season. It's time to come forth and express according to its nature and purpose. He knew he was sent into this world with a mission to preach the gospel, heal the sick, and comfort those in need. He spoke of truth, and his message was for all people. Now his message, it was not popular with the scribes, the Pharisees, and other church leaders. His message was contrary to what they preached and held to be true. And we are told they sought to do him harm. There were times when Jesus' disciples were very concerned about his safety. But this response was that his time had not yet come. He would be betrayed into the hands of men and they would kill him. But that time had not yet come. He still had work to do. But there did come a time when he knew his mission was complete. In the book of John, in his prayer for his disciples, Jesus accounted for what he had done. And then there was that scene in Gethsemane when he knew that the hour had come for him. The hour is at hand and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. And then on the cross, there were the words, "It is finished." He was acknowledging that his time had come. So what does the phrase, "the hour cometh," have to do with us? Could it be that we too have a mission, a purpose and a reason for coming into expression at this particular time? Well, I believe that we do. And furthermore, I think that our soul knows what it is. When we look back over our lives and consider those decisions and choices, we do notice certain things. There were those times when we knew we were doing the right thing because we felt it in an inward way. There was no doubt. It might be said that we knew that the hour had come for us. Our soul's awareness knew it was so, and we listened, and then we obeyed. But other times, we weren't so sure that we had made the right determination. Because, you see, we had not bothered to take the time to notice if it felt right in an inward way. There are times when we have acted on impulse, on a whim, or a wish. We did not understand that our time had not yet come to enter into a new phase of experience. Perhaps we still had work to do where we were. We had not yet completed what we were given to do. Acting outside of our season for expression brings confusion, disappointment, and dissatisfaction. The lesson for us today is to be alert to the inner feeling. Jesus was so aware of the inner feeling that he could declare, "My hour has not yet come," or "It is finished." Let us do the same. This morning we have the opportunity to turn within and be one with this light that lighteth the soul of all mankind. Would you join me now in our closing meditation? In our time of meditation, we enter a place of stillness that is not known to the human mind. In the absence of thought, we feel and sense the presence that dwells in the soul of man. And we know, "I am that I am." In the holy sanctuary of inner being, there are no concerns, no anxiety of mind or body. The inner being is spiritual in nature, one with God and one with our fellow man. The spiritual life is eternal. It has no beginning and no end. It is of God, abundant, whole, and complete. The message is, it is my good pleasure to give you the kingdom and all that I have is thine. The spiritual fruit awaits our acceptance. The soul is the place of acknowledgement, and it is there that we accept all that the Father has provided. As we leave the church this morning, let us not forget the inner sanctuary where Spirit dwells. We carry it with us at all times and in all places. Turn to me, and I will turn to you, is the way of recognition. Let us go in peace. Amen.
May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his light to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Turn within and acknowledge him so that he may lift your consciousness and give you his peace. Amen.